You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Spartan Dog Podcast is brought to you by Simple Tee, simpletee.org. It's the only t-shirt company in the area where you print t-shirts, they give back to the community, and they're hooked up with our good friends at Fugged now. Their printing capabilities are crazy. So get involved, simpletee.org. And if the sun is coming out, go out, grab a kettlebell, get your swings at Conquest Health and Fitness. It's time. Zumba classes, yoga. Dre, anything else you want to add to that?
Matt Pilates,
whatever.
Personal training.
All of that. And Evergreen, car detail and wash. Did I get it right this time? Close enough. Go get your car washed. That's it for that one. All right, we got our first guest ever today. We're joined by Dr. Joey. Is it, you want to go with Joey or Joe?
Joe's fine.
Joe Eisman, Dr. Joe Carlson. We can't go wrong today. We got two Joes from MSU SNAP, Spartan Nutrition and Performance Program. I think all of us will say, we always get asked by people, how can I train like a Division I athlete? I know I have before. What do you guys do? This is they are the co-directors of this program that is going to take off and give kids between the ages of 10 and 18 the chance to find out what it's really like. Welcome, guys, to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Great being here.
Yeah, I think it's a important topic nowadays, especially for the younger generation to start understanding how to train properly. There's a lot of people that talk to them about the wrong things to do. Why don't you guys tell us a little bit about how this got started and your idea and where it came from?
So we started out initially with working with MSU athletes, so that's part of our program. So we're based out of the Department of Radiology, Division of Sports and Cardiovascular Nutrition. So we've been providing sports nutrition for MSU athletes since 2005. And so basically, Dr. Eisman's been on board for a little over a year, and he's been spearheading getting the SNAP community program rolling.
Well, this is Todd T.J. Duckett here with Andre Hudson and Timbo Gracchus. This is Spartan Dogs Podcast. We've done a lot of talking about passions in the past podcast. Why this? Where's the passion? Where? Maybe tell us a little bit about your backgrounds and the things you've seen or have experienced, and just wondering why the passion.
So, like all of us around the table here, I was a college athlete as well, and you know, as a young athlete and a college athlete, you know, I just got interested in sports performance. Went on to pursue my graduate education. I'm trained in pediatric exercise physiology. And again, I think like everybody around the table, we just want to give back, sure, you know, knowledge and skills that we have to the community. And, you know, this is something that I've had in my back pocket for 20 years now.
Nice.
And as an academic, you know, besides the work in, you know, pediatric sports medicine, sports performance, we both do quite a bit of work in child obesity, cardiovascular health, which is also a very important topic. And when you're at a big place like Michigan State, a lot of times, you know, the administrators put a lot of pressure on you for grant funding, you know, major health-related grant funding. So we've been spending a lot of time doing that. And a few years ago, I went to Tom Cooper, who is the department chair at radiology, and kind of pitched this idea to him. And he just stopped the conversation. He said, "Joe, this just makes too much sense. We have to do this." So here we are, and you know, everybody on our staff has a lot of passion for taking our knowledge in, you know, sports science and sports nutrition and sports medicine and helping young athletes 10 to 18. And even, you know, we should probably let it be known that we're going to help college athletes as well. Not necessarily the MSU college athletes, because they get taken care of very well by Coach Manny and Red and the strength and conditioning staff and everybody over there. But, you know, local athletes who, you know, they aspire to play at the next level, play better, or they're college athletes who, you know, they're from the East Lansing area, and they're playing at Western Michigan, and they're going to come back for the summer. They can come and train with us as well. We've already had quite a few of those individuals contact us.
Yeah, Andre Hudson here, Spartan Dog Podcast. One thing that I really liked about your guys is kind of what you guys are doing. I checked out your website and saw some videos. They can look at your website. What's the website again?
The website is snap.msu.edu. snap.com.
Right.
.edu, I'm sorry, right. Snap. Yes. Yeah, snap.msu.edu.
Yeah, doc, yeah, you like me, man. I struggle remembering those URLs. I should have been a doctor, man. But what I liked is, you know, I think every athlete is looking for that extra edge when it comes to training and how to become better, especially at the younger level, high school, junior high level. And you see these days a lot more gruesome injuries, I think, with the training. Not from the training, but just these athletes are getting so much better physically that, you know, whether in the professional ranks or the college ranks, there's some really nasty injuries. And I think, you know, I like a lot of what you guys do is because you also do some preventative training that kind of helps prevent some of those injuries. If you guys can kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I'll take that first and then I'll turn it over to Joe with some nutrition-related stuff. But, yeah, another really unique part of our program is that we're very well situated with MSU Sports Medicine and MSU Rehab Medicine. So Mary Thiel, she's the director of MSU Rehab Medicine, and you know, over the course of the winter, she ran an ACL prevention program for female athletes. So we're in this setting where we have these critical eyes of not only performance, which we're more interested in, but this injury prevention aspect as well. So, you know, it's a really unique environment for a young person to come into and, you know, get taken care of basically from a multidisciplinary perspective, which, you know, is really unheard of for young athletes. They, you know, as you guys know, you don't get that type of care until you hit, you know, D1 college level or, you know, something like that. And, you know, the other thing is we're very aware of this overtraining syndrome as well. A lot of kids come to us and I'm talking to a dad or a mom or whoever, and they're like, well, Johnny's playing this sport, and they're doing this, and he wants to come and train with you guys. And I'm like, well, hold on a minute here. If he comes and trains with us, we're just going to overtrain him. So we have to back off here. So we're providing a lot of guidance on that as well.
Right.
And there's a lot of nutritional aspects that fall into play here as well in terms of, you know, preventing injury and recovery and stuff like that.
Yeah. So from the nutrition side, yeah, I think there's a lot of misconceptions. There's so much advertising, different supplements, and one of the big things we see with young kids is, yeah, as Dr. Eisman said, a lot of overtraining. So one of the key goals is getting energy balance, and a lot of these kids are trying to get leaner. They want to be more ripped. Therefore, they cut back on their calories, and basically they shoot themselves in the foot. And with respect to, they break down their immune system. They start getting sick, and whether it's a male or a female, they can compromise their bone health. So part of it is just getting them in a pattern that's going to help them refuel, recover, and be ready for the next workout. And then it is also an avenue to improve the quality of the nutrition. So we have a lot of kids with risk factors for heart disease. So we're all about that in terms of not only performance, but it goes hand in hand with the health perspective. So we really focus on nutritional quality and you know, kids are going to be kids, but if they feel it's going to help them go to the next level, and particularly if we have some, for instance, MSU athletes that buy into it and they're a spokesperson for it, and we have a few of those, that can be very motivational for these young athletes.
Is there any supplement that a high school athlete should take?
Great question. So I'm going to just give an overview with so the current policy with so Dr. Covan's the head team physician for MSU Athletics, and his present stand is the best approach is just stay away from the supplements. So a multivitamin is fine, but if an athlete for MSU Athletics is taking a supplement, we need to document that they're taking it. And so the reality is a lot of these companies, the laws are very weak if they do not make what's called a disease claim. So and when you look at the supplement bottle, it'll state it may improve. And then it'll say it's not evaluated by the FDA. So there's a lot of loose wording, and these websites are very enticing. They'll get an endorsement from a pro athlete, but it can get, you know, scary. And, you know, at the NCAA level, there's several cases of athletes that have tested positive for products that you can buy at the local supplement store.
Yeah, I think that's a big issue. And making them aware of what those products are. I know playing in the NFL, they had a very strict policy as well. I mean, but you could go and buy something from Whole Foods that has certain things in it, and they don't care that you didn't read the label, and they don't care all these things. Right. And as a young adult who's learning this way to train, it's great for them to be informed. It sounds like you do a lot of educating them, like you said, not just in the sports world, but also in the body and the food.
Absolutely.
Is this something that when you both were youths that you thought about, that you looked at, or did it happen over time? Were you young athletes saying, man, if I could just train a little different, or if I could just eat a little healthier? Is this something that you guys thought about?
I mean, I think one thing that always happens when I talk to a parent about this, and Tim actually said this as well, he's like, man, I wish this was around when I was a young athlete. Yeah. And, you know, when I was a high school-aged athlete, you know, I sought out my own ways to train and stuff. And when I was a college athlete, I actually trained at a center very similar to the one that we're putting together right now. And that's really been sitting with me for 20-plus years. And as I said before, it's sat there, and I've finally been given the opportunity to kind of have it come to fruition.
I think the nice thing is that I remember as a high school athlete, young athlete, I took my cues from the guys that were on TV. And when I was growing up, there was the creatine boom during the baseball era when everybody was on creatine. And in my mind I thought I need to be taking this stuff. I never did, but it was so easy for me to say, well, this guy's taking that supplement, I should be taking that supplement just because. And didn't even think about a long-term effect or whatnot. So to have the university buy into this, and to have, you know, former athletes like ourselves and other, you know, current athletes say, yeah, this is important for you as a young athlete to pay attention to what you put in your body is going to be, you know, so huge for this community, I think, within the next decade.
And that's I love it. I know when I was growing up and playing, there were teammates of mine in high school who were taking creatine. I mean, we're taking these things. And for whatever reason, I believe the commercials that said, don't do this stuff. And I didn't. I mean, I always thought you just outwork a person. You just work harder. And I never fully understood how you had weights over here, but I'm going to take this powder over here, and this is what's going to get me stronger, get me bigger, when these weights over here are just sitting there. And so for me, it was always lift. It was always run. It was always push your body. And at the same time, taking a powder and a drink, with however you do it, or a pill, whatever it is, it was never, I mean, you're lifting weight, actually doing some type of exercise that is incorporated to the sport. I mean, I'm sitting on my butt, spinning, stirring a cup. That's really not doing anything. I mean, you're actually sitting here doing something with the football sports movement to get better rather than just taking something. And, you know, that was something that was interesting to me.
Yeah, I kind of go back to my past, too, and I think, you know, coming up through high school, I was the same way. I mean, my training was in the weight room or on the field or on the track. You know, it was normal stuff. And to be honest, I didn't even get introduced to creatine. I knew nothing about creatine until I came here to state. That my freshman year, I mean, it was, at the time, it was okay to take it. I remember we were going to the weight room and training would have a little cup, you know, probably a spoonful of powder or something.
You sure you need to be saying this?
I mean, at the time it was okay. They really did it for like maybe that summer. You know what I mean? After that, they kind of nixed it.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah. But I mean, it was the first time I got introduced to it, and you know, it was weird, man. I've never been a big believer in supplements. You know, we took a lot of protein shakes and things of that nature, but I'm a believer of getting it done. You know, getting out on the field and just putting in the work. And I think what you guys have to offer, it gives a lot of variety of training, of the total training aspect, you know, training individual muscles, individual parts to, you know, to work at their best, at their maximum peak without adding, you know, things that are not supposed to be in the body. I mean, I really commend you guys for what you do regarding that.
Yeah, the one thing that hasn't been mentioned is, you know, we've talked a lot about training and nutrition, but the other part of the puzzle for us is the mental aspect. So, you know, at every training session, the kids, you know, they get trained, and at the end, we always do 5-10 minutes of nutrition and 5-10 minutes of mental skills. So we take them through you know, goal setting. We take them through visualization, imagery, and positive self-talk and relaxation under pressure. And, you know, you guys know, and you've been there before, you're playing in a game and you make a mistake and things start going in your head and they go mm-hmm. wrong and things just keep going wrong. And, you know, that's, you know, as a 14-year-old athlete, nobody talks to you about that ever.
Right.
You know, you usually don't learn that stuff until you're in college, maybe or professional,
yeah, exactly.
maybe. Yeah. You know, some programs are way more progressive than others, and they have a full-time sports psychologist on staff or full-time sports nutrition or whatever. But a lot of programs, especially for these young athletes, you know, they don't get that. They have a volunteer coach. They have a dad who raised their hand.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what the background is.
Yeah, I think back, even going back to my high school, we had a trainer, and it's probably still the same. Our trainer was like the trainer for like six different schools in the area. You know what I mean? It wasn't
Absolutely.
That. And it wasn't much. You know, he came around game day, and I don't even think we saw him in practice. So things are different, man. Things are a lot different.
Just one comment on the creatine. So within the NCAA it's not illegal, so there's not what's called an assay that'll make an athlete test positive. Mm-hmm. But where it gets so I'm not necessarily endorsing it, but that's the status of that. The situation where athletes get themselves in trouble, there's a lot of cocktails. So it has creatine, has a stimulant in it, and maybe a stimulant that's not even listed. Mm-hmm. So it's unfortunate, but, there's cases in the NFL – and in Major League Baseball where it's not on the label, but there's an assay for a certain stimulant that's not even on the product. And then, so it's very unfortunate. With respect to youth, the American College of Sports Medicine, American Academy of Pediatrics, they do not suggest the use of creatine in youth. There's not enough data. The reality is you get creatine, you can get it through food as well. Not in the amounts you get it, in a supplement, but just need to be very careful and can be problematic.
So you hear that, youth? Watch out for those cocktails.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
You listen to Spartan Dog Podcast Radio. Could you give us a little bit of info on what a training session is like? What one is like, and then after that, we'll get into when and where and how. But give us a start, finish, approximate time, and just something that they could learn.
Yeah, sure. So our focus is really on speed and general athletic enhancement. So we have a variety of program options that you can choose from, where you can choose, 8 or 12 sessions. So if you enroll in like 8 sessions, you can come for a month and come twice a week. Or if you do 12 sessions, that would be like a 6-week twice a week. Or maybe you're an athlete who's, in season, so you want to do more maintenance. So you can choose that 8 or 12 package and just come once a week for maintenance. And then we have 2-month package, 3-month package, 6 or a year. So we have over a dozen young athletes right now who have indicated they want to be in our yearly package, which means we're going to take care of them. Off season, preseason, in season, we're going to take care of us.
Where were you a few years ago?
So that means you're going to craft a year long workout routine and nutrition plan for each individual athlete based on whatever sport they're playing.
Yeah.
And if they transition from sport to sport, that changes with them?
Not necessarily. So a typical session for us, again, we're focusing on speed and general athletic enhancement. So a typical session is they come in, they go through a dynamic warm up. And, during that process, we teach them the importance of dynamic warm-up mentally as well. You get a routine. When you show up to the ballpark, when you show up for a game, you have a routine. It sets your mind. And we want them to get in that routine of setting their mind even for a training session. So the first part of the training session is always speed development. So we utilize high-speed treadmill training. So our treadmill goes 30 miles an hour up to 30% grade. And,
I can hear the treadmill in my head right now. That pot of the feet. I can hear it.
Yeah. So it's not like you're going to be running 30 miles an hour. It's just its capability. So we set different speeds and grades, and all of the runs are anywhere between 5 and 10 seconds because we're working on that short burst, high intensity movement. Mm-hmm. there's a mirror in front of the athlete so they can see themselves mechanically. The trainer's right there beside them, so they're making adjustments. There are two high-speed cameras, one at the back and one on the side, that's fed into a motion analysis system. So when they get off the treadmill, we take them over to the screen and we say, okay, you see your knee right here? It's at 89 degrees. We can identify the angle of it, right? So it's at 89 degrees. For maximal efficiency, it really needs, in power output, it really needs to be at 93 degrees. So we need to get here. We can draw it right on the screen and show them. Wow. They get back on the treadmill, they see themselves in the mirror, we're making the adjustment. So that lasts for about 30 minutes, and then we go through four square plyometrics, kind of foot quickness drills, but also really good for dynamic stability, core stability of the body, learn how to control your body in space and time. And then from there, we go to lower body power. So we'll do some leg press stuff, some box jumps, just some vertical power drills with them. And then we do some agility stuff, so, you know, forward, backward, shuffle, multi-directional agility. We use a lot of cord technology, so resistant cords. So we'll put a belt on them, put the cord on them, and so you're doing resisted shuffles, sure, things like that. And then again, at the end, we always finish up with nutrition and mental skills. So that's a typical session, and they'll go through, you know, 8 sessions, 12 sessions, or if they're in the yearly plan, we cater it. We'll say, okay, here's a 4-week window where we can train really hard, because football season's coming up or whatever. So we have 4 weeks to train really hard. You know, we're going to go 3 days a week. And then once football starts, let's just come in once a week and maintain. And then all of a sudden, Johnny's bonking on Friday night, right? I'm not understanding why he's not playing so well. He feels really great or whatever. And so we start talking about nutrition, right? He gives us a call and says, you know, I'm really struggling. I can't relax under pressure situations. So we bring in one of the sports psychology folks and have a call with them or whatever.
So they can just call you? I mean, they can just...
Well, they have to set up an appointment, okay, and come in, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any type of pushback or any type of confusion with the coaches, where the coaches are saying, I don't know if my team, I want you coaching my team. You know, that type of coaches tend to like to have some type of control.
Yeah.
But is there any type of issue between that?
So as of right now, we haven't ran into that. Mm-hmm. So I think where we're going to run into that is mainly with high school athletes, and in particular football. Mm-hmm. Most of the football programs in this area have a fairly sound strength and conditioning program that the kids go through. And you all know, you know, if you don't show up for your strength and conditioning sessions, you're not going to play on Friday night, right? So there may be a kid who wants to train with us. And we're going to be really cautious about this, and we're going to ask them before they come in, what are you currently doing right now? Because if they're involved in their high school strength and conditioning program and they're going 4 days a week and they want to come and train with us 2 days a week, again, we're probably going to put them in that overtrained state. We don't want to do that. So we need to have a little bit of communication with the athlete, the parent, and the coach in a situation like that.
So just one point related to that. When they first... basically sign up, there's a pretty comprehensive intake. It includes nutrition, their schedule. So with the nutrition, it sheds good insight on what they're doing on their pattern. And so, as Dr. Eisenman said, near the end of their workout, we have targeted items that will reinforce that may be weak in their whether it be their nutrition pattern, types of foods. So very comprehensive, but I would view it as, we want to augment. Obviously, when they're in sport and with the team, they need to be with the team.
Sure.
So we're not going to have any barriers or create any situations that are negative for that. We want to.
So you encourage the keeping the lines of communication open. Encourage talk, whether it's parent to athlete to you, coach to athlete to you, athlete to you, just encourage the communication, encourage the talk, the dialogue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It sounds like you guys keep a good job of keeping a balance of these kids, you know, not trying to overwork them, but also giving them the maximum that they can handle and still perform at a high level. So I commend you guys for that. Just wanted to, before we wrap things up, if you can let them know where they can find you. Where you guys do your training at, how to get a hold of you.
Yeah. So, again, the website is snap.msu.edu.
Yep.
And in about 1 week, we're going to be located in the Ide Building.
New building.
New facility. Yeah.
New location.
Yeah, so, yesterday. It's nice.
So fourth floor, that's where sports medicine is located. So you can get out of the elevator, go to the right, that's sports medicine. You go to the left, and we're co-located with MSU Rehab Medicine there. That's where our center is. So we'll be in there in a week, and we're going to start seeing athletes there May 15th.
Very nice.
Nice.
Find them on Facebook. You're on Facebook, right?
We're on Facebook.
Yep. Any information. We have, like, the end of asking you just a question, and usually it's, I guess, pertaining to our subject, and with it being training and nutrition, what would be a final point, just a final thing either you've learned in this process or you want our listeners to take away from this that can really tie in everything we've talked about you all's career and about your organization?
Okay, so that's a big question, but I'll be brief. One thing I want to emphasize, and I know TJ, Andre, Tim, they're proponents of education. And one of the benefits that I gained from, so I did a couple years of D3 football, and frankly, I was on the sideline a lot. I got to travel. I kicked a bit. But during that time, you do a lot of basically pondering what you're going to do. Obviously, I wasn't going to make a career out of it. So that really helped me focus where I wanted to go academically. So for all the youth, I think it's important, to be a good athlete. You have to get your grades, and it's very helpful with scheduling, just planning. So a lot of benefits there. And the reality is, if you look at how many MSU athletes actually make it to the next level and make a career out of it, it's rare. So that's just a push for education. And then I would say the primary thing that I'm seeing with the young athlete and nutrition is this issue of energy balance with respect to their training. It's very easy to get in what's called negative energy or negative caloric balance. And basically, as soon as you get there, you're in a catabolic state or crashing down. You're not going to build muscle. Your immune function is going to go down. Many negative things, even your mental state when you're in the game. And that may occur in the second half of a game, but nutrition has a very potent effect if done properly. So just keep that in mind, and we've got a lot of information we can transmit, so you get a chance to check us out on the web.
I'll be real short because I know we're running low on time here. But
we got time.
You know, just so people understand that we're providing an integrated, holistic approach to the care and the training of the young athlete. So very multifaceted approach. A lot of people with a lot of initials behind their names taking care of young athletes. And, you know, there's that level of expertise really comes through when you think about, you know, taking care of that young person and developing them not only as a young athlete, but, you know, these other things that we're trying to get across as well, because you can take positive self-talk, for example, and turn that over to what we're going to do the rest of the day, you know, as adults. Mm-hmm. You know, we got to be positive. You know, sure. We're going to have some bumps today. We know that, but we have to get through those bumps too.
Absolutely.
One more time, can you let us know where we can find you and how to get in touch?
Sure. snap.msu.edu.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Go work out with them. Give them a shout. Give them a call, email, like them on Facebook, and get your train on.
Spartan Dog Podcast. Thank you guys for joining us.
Go green.
Go white.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. We'll have more in a moment.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. We've all heard the expression, it's all about who you know. And wherever you are on your career ladder, having a friend on the inside can make all the difference. When you join the MSU Alumni Association family, you're instantly connected to 500,000 Spartans around the world, many of whom are key decision makers in just about every major enterprise. Whether you're looking for a way in or a way up, your MSU Alumni Association affiliation can help you link up with that MSU alum who'll always take your call just because you're a Spartan. Building your network right now before you need it is the best possible career insurance, and joining the MSU Alumni Association is the best possible way to get the most out of your Spartan life. Learn more online at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome to the show John Hoffmeister. John is the founder and chief executive of Citizens for Affordable Energy, the foundation of which is based in Washington, D.C. He is also the former president of Shell Oil Company. John was recently in the Detroit area just this past Friday to participate in a forum entitled Building Michigan's Energy Future. John, a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Citizens for Affordable Energy.
What I learned when I was Shell president was that one of the issues facing us and the energy future of this country was the awareness or the amount of knowledge that people carry around in their heads about energy. Citizens for Affordable Energy was founded on a nonpartisan basis to explain to people as best we can on a factual, grounded basis what the future prospects look like for both energy and the environment. So we are basically a public education service to the American people. We spend all of our time using social networking as our primary medium, but we also do a lot of personal engagement around the country, such as in Livonia, our recent visit there, to try to explain to people what's what, what's possible, what's not, and cut the politics right out of the process. Let's deal with facts. And so we're a factual-based organization. We're funded only by consumers. So we are not funded by energy companies, and therefore our message is crystal clear to consumers. This is about you.
Well, you mentioned the forum in Michigan just this past Friday on Building Michigan's Energy Future. You were on a panel, are among a group that included representatives from Governor Snyder's energy team, labor unions, the petroleum and finance industries. An undergirding theme was an all-of-the-above energy strategy. What do you mean by an all-of-the-above energy strategy?
We use energy from all kinds of sources every day. Average consumers may not realize it, but some of the electrons they receive through the electricity system in their house, some of it comes from coal, some of it from natural gas, some of it from nuclear, some of it may come from wind or solar renewable energy, some may come from hydropower. When it comes to transportation vehicles and the fuels that we use in our gas tanks, we use gasoline, of course, diesel. Some of it may come from biofuels, some of it may come from corn, ethanol. And so all the above means how many sources of energy do we have, how many can we exploit to our advantage, and ultimately, how do we keep it all affordable? Because if energy is not affordable, what good is it? We don't want to be a country of energy haves and have-nots, so affordability becomes a very important part of what it is that we talk about. And the way to have affordability is to have more fuel supply than is demanded by the population. That's how we got through the 20th century. We always had more fuel than the country needed. Well, we always had more electrons than the country needed. That kept it affordable. Now we have failing public policy. We have public policy which restricts access to domestic energy production, to building new power plants, and we just need to get rational and practical about all of this. And the other part of the message is about how we could turn investments in the 21st century energy system, which replaces and needs to replace the 20th century energy system, how do we produce prosperity in this country? There's so much private money that could be spent on energy investment that, to me, the message, my main message on Friday, was we are holding back prosperity to our fellow citizens by virtue of not having an adequate and well-understood energy plan for the future. Michigan, just like 49 other states, are holding themselves back from prosperity because of this issue.
John, I don't need to tell you this, but the United States has been woeful in trying to establish any kind of a national energy policy, and you've alluded to that because sometimes politics, and increasingly politics, seems to get in the way of policy. Are you seeing a trend where the states are filling the void? Because, frankly, a lot of people aren't optimistic that the government, the federal government's ever going to get there.
Politics is really the death of our energy future. Because we cannot agree between Republicans and Democrats what is in the best interest of the nation. Too often it becomes what is in the best interest of holding power at the Republican Party level or at the Democratic Party level. And the nation can be the subsidiary instead of the primary. And so I'm only interested in the nation's good. And you're absolutely right. Some states have taken the bull by the horns and have said, we're not going to wait. We're going to get off and running on our own energy future, taking advantage of the resources that we have. And I think Michigan is at the edge of possibly doing that. It's not over the edge yet because we don't yet see what's possible to be seen. I've read the governor's paper on energy. It talks prospectively, but there's a lot to do. But it's not that every state can do this. There are some energy have-not states in the country that rely upon energy have states. And Michigan is one of those in part. Michigan doesn't have sufficient oil, coal, uranium resources to make it on its own. So it's more of an energy have-not state than an energy have state. Having said that, Michigan is blessed with oil and gas deposits, which can be developed far more than they have been, which is self-help for the state of Michigan. Michigan is also a huge producer of electricity, but it's old systems, old grid, old facilities, all of which could be upgraded, made more efficient, made more productive, and ultimately could provide more electricity, not less, because I think that is going to be the name of the game. If Michigan is prosperous, you will attract jobs. You will attract more people. People will stay in the state of Michigan, and you will need more domestically produced, state-produced power, which is really good for inward investment in the state of Michigan. That's part of prosperity.
Let's look at Michigan in particular. There's some real opportunities for natural gas extraction because of some new technologies in hydraulic fracturing. You were in Michigan. It looks like it can provide some real economic opportunity. What's your take?
Well, let me say, let me recapture some of my messages on last week. There are three major priorities I think Michigan could focus on from an energy supply standpoint. Number one, of course, is natural gas. Introducing new technologies in the production of natural gas is a logical progression for Michigan's historic production of natural gas. Other states are doing it, Pennsylvania, Ohio. You go down to the southwest, you've got Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana. Making use of hydraulic fracturing as a new technology done safely, and let me repeat, done safely according to regulations, makes a lot of sense for the state of Michigan. To develop your own natural resources, which creates jobs and inward investment in the state of Michigan. The second thing is you've got tremendous renewable potential in the state of Michigan, some of which has been captured, but not enough yet. And so whether it's biomass for biofuels, not necessarily corn, I'm not a big fan of corn for fuel because it's food, but other biomass, wind, certainly Michigan has its share of wind. And so I think there's great opportunity from a renewable fuel standpoint. You've also got a lot of water. Hydropower is a great source of electricity. But there's a third thing. The third thing is building the supply chain in Michigan to support energy inward investment. This is where you do the great work of the machining, the steel cutting, the engineering, the services work, and all of the attendant activities of building the supply chain. Michigan builds a lot of cars and trucks. What does drilling need but cars and trucks? What do renewable countries need but trucks and trucks and cars and cars? And so it's a whole systems approach that needs to be thought about when it's building out the supply chain to support inward investment in energy. I think there's also the whole world of efficiency, which the governor has talked about. Efficiency is renewing the amount of energy or reducing the amount of energy needed in older buildings. And Michigan is blessed with many, many older buildings. You have a lot of stock of older homes, older office buildings, older factories, all of which could stand more efficiency to reduce the use of energy. That's another form of inward investment for the payback in lower energy costs. And so all of these, again, attract the supply chain for the materials and the people that would supply that kind of investment in efficiency. So the combination of these things, and then environmental protection is actually another stream of activity, because I think we're approaching an age where the American people are coming to realize that pollution is not free, that someone pays a price. And the people that pay the price really should be the people who use the energy. There's no free sky, there's no free water, there's no free land to just dump our wastes upon. And so we need to treat them, we need to bury them, we need to care for them, you know, really as a life cycle to the energy system. That's another stream of investment that can occur. So I'm a big fan of energy investment for the sake of the people who benefit from that energy that's being created, being distributed, and being used for life's purposes. And why not focus on it as a major part of the future economic development of the state of Michigan?
I'm talking to John Hofmeister, who's the founder and chief executive of Citizens for Affordable Energy. John, there are some who say that these opportunities in natural gas and even in oil extraction from hydraulic fracturing may slow down the push for more renewable energy, that what was once considered a scarcity issue may no longer be so, and there won't be the same pressure on Washington, for example, or on state governments to continue to broaden the energy portfolio. What would you say to those criticisms?
At least two things. One, and I said it on Friday, renewable energy has a long way to go to be commercialized. And when we talk about affordable energy, I don't think it's appropriate, whether it's old traditional energy or new renewable energy, it's not appropriate that this is taxpayer subsidized. I think energy should stand alone. And so with respect to solar, with respect to wind, with respect to biofuels, biomass, I think that we have a ways to go and down the technology chain to make all those forms of renewables more productive, particularly biomass. We really don't understand the biochemistry yet of taking living matter and turning it rapidly into transportation fuel. We really haven't been able to scale up the size of the quantity of biofuels to mix with gasoline to meet demand. We're well behind the Energy Act of 2007 that called for 36 billion gallons a year. We're well behind the pattern that was set in the law because the biochemistry is slowing us down. So what kind of things can we do in Michigan universities to accelerate the biochemistry, the chemical engineering necessary to produce biomass for transportation fuels at a larger scale? So it's not that we're slowing down renewables by investing in natural gas or oil. It's that we need all the above over time. But we've got to get the technology curve, for example, on solar energy, much further down the technology pathway, because efficiencies that are in the low teens to high teens, which is about where the technology is today, simply can't compete over time with natural gas or coal when it comes to the affordability of solar electricity, given the fact that solar only works when the sun shines. And there's a whole lot of time during the year that the sun simply doesn't shine in Michigan, especially at night, but also when the cloud arrives every fall. It sticks around for month after month after month. I've lived near Michigan, so I know the cloud. And so this the technology has got to be advanced so that we can get solar energy on cloudy days, which is possible with some substrates that have been tested but not applied yet. So there's a long journey ahead of us to get the technology for prime time, as I call it. But I haven't given up. I don't think any of us should give up. We'll get there. It takes a long time to get to the moon or to Mars. It's going to take a long time to get to where biofuels, wind, and solar really contribute much more substantively to the energy system.
John, I got one more question for you. Actually, I have several questions, but we're running out of time. But you indicate in several places, and you've written in your book that came out, I think, about 2010, why we hate the oil companies. And we could also talk about that. I'm going to get the book, by the way. But you say, you reiterate that government does have a role to provide the infrastructure, to provide a policy that we need to move the entrepreneurial spirit forward. Are you at all optimistic that government, at least at the federal level, can do that?
Not in the current configuration. I'm totally pessimistic. We've been at it since Richard Nixon trying to create a national energy plan. If eight presidents can't get it done over 40 years of time trying, it's not going to get done. There isn't going to be a ninth president somehow after Obama somehow comes along and is the genius on this subject. Obama said he'd do it. George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George H.W., Ronald Reagan, they all said they would do it. Nothing has materialized. In fact, it's worse today than it has been when we started this journey because of the partisanship that's existing, the focus on election cycles in which nothing gets done except engaging the constituents for re-election. And so I just don't have any hope until we change the form of governance that we have for energy, which is what my book is frankly all about. How do we change the governance for the good of America? Because the current governance isn't going to work. And so we could spend a lot of time talking about that. But the real issue is, what are we going to do tomorrow? What are we going to do the next day? And right now, we have so much we can do, we shouldn't stop doing, because technology has opened new doors and windows for energy. And when we look at the jobless rate of America, and we look at the slow economic growth of 1% to 2% per year, which just isn't good enough for this country. This country thrived in the 20th century on 4 and 5% economic growth rates. We need to get back to that 4 and 5% where we're a job-creating nation. We can do that by investing in today's energy system for tomorrow's energy. And it's private money. It's not taxpayer money. What we need from government, and this is what government can do and is doing at the state level, could be done at the federal level even without changing the governance, and that is create enablers. Create the enablers, which is grant the permits. Make the permits possible. Don't sit there as government and say what we can stop industry from doing. What can we help industry to do? Industry creates the jobs. Government doesn't create the jobs. And so when they stop projects from going forward, when they put a stop to a pipeline, when they won't approve this, that, or the other infrastructure, that stops the economy in place. And what we need in this country is economic movement in the direction of what we need as a society, which is 21st century energy systems. And so while I'm a big advocate of changing the totality of governance of energy for the long term, there are a lot of things we can do today, tomorrow, and the next day if government would just get with the program and realize government exists for, of, and by the people. It's not the naysayer against what the people need. And too often we hear what government can't do or won't let industry do instead of what can government do to enable industry to do what it does, which is create jobs and create value for the citizens.
And all my listeners out there are nodding their heads. At least it appears that you and Governor Snyder are exactly on the same page. I've been talking with John Hofmeister, the founder and chief executive of Citizens for Affordable Energy, also former president of Shell Oil Company. John, thanks so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure. And on that final optimistic note, we'll have to end the interview.
Thank you for having me.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
I'm Scott Westerman from the Michigan State University Alumni Association with another observation from the Spartan Life.
One of the regrets I have about the intensity of my great gig at MSU is that I don't have nearly the time I would like to spend with people who want to talk with me about career advice in person. I always start by guiding them to our superb MSUAA Alumni Career Services team. Our approach is a lot different than the resume polishers many of us may have experienced in the past. It's all about figuring out what you love and building a personal toolbox to help you get paid for doing it. On the occasions where it's impossible for me to sync up my schedule for a one-on-one, I share the high points in an email. And here they are. Number one, discover your passion. Life is always much more fun if you're doing something you love. Number two, pick your company carefully. Too many people jump into cultures that are totally out of sync with who they are. To paraphrase Jim Collins in Good to Great, first where, then what? What are your top five favorite companies? Why? How could you add value there? Number three, draw a map. Stephen Covey says, begin with the end in mind. Where do you want to be 10 years from now? The more detailed a picture you can paint of your current ultimate objective, the easier it will be to design a roadmap to get you there. To follow up on picking your company carefully, which organizations might have your dream job? Where are the entry points for your dream career? What are the steps others have taken to get where you want to go? Assess your assets is number four. Once you know what makes you happy, it's a lot easier to aim toward that end. How have you prepared for that life? Are there any additional skills you need? How will you create and promote your personal brand? Number five, build a productive network. Connect with people who are already where you want to be. LinkedIn's power isn't in the quantity of people in your network. It's the quality. One of the best things about LinkedIn's search functionality is how you can parse your network for the companies and job types you're interested in, and then seek Spartans who already work in these places. These are the connections that will be the most important to you. Read Keith Ferrazzi's Never Eat Alone. It's not only the best networking book on the market, it's the best relationship book out there. Number six, add value before you are hired. Too many people ask me to help them find a job. In fact, we hire solutions and ideas, not people. If you have identified a company where you want to work, study it thoroughly. What are their strengths and weaknesses? Who are their competitors? What is their biggest current challenge? Think of ways you can help them overcome their problems and grow more successful. Imagine that you are a consultant and have been hired to help them grow the business. What would you recommend? How would you implement your idea? What would it cost? What resources would it require? If you've done this exercise, your career conversations will be much more fruitful. This is being proactive, and it pays off. And what if the job you want doesn't exist yet? A growing percentage of our graduates are working in positions that weren't around 5 years ago. Some even discovered that their research reveals an opportunity to create their own gig. Don't be afraid to create yours. Be professionally persistent. You will likely get rejected a number of times before someone realizes your value. That's okay. Keep in touch with the people you meet who work where you want to work. Share helpful links and productive ideas with them from time to time. Don't swamp them with email, but share ideas of real value when you find them. If you have been able to learn about their interests outside of work, seek ways to help them improve the quality of their lives. We tend to be attracted to people who genuinely care about us as individuals. We are repelled by pests. Keep the faith. This is the most important thing. If you maintain a focus on your objective, listen and act on the feedback you receive, build a productive network, and find ways to add value, you will inevitably get the job you seek. Never lose your capacity for hope. So ponder these points. You'll be able to ask the "Can you help me?" question much more effectively. When you get that face-to-face with an advisor or mentor, the conversation will be much more productive. And in the end, you'll discover that the question isn't, "Can you help me?" It's, "How can I help you?"
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.